Thanks for tuning in to KNSA Radio. It's 5 minutes after 9 o'clock on this rainy Saturday, July 30th, 2016. I'm Lorelei Ivanoff, and I am here with Senator Dan Sullivan. Good morning, Senator.
Hi, Lorelei. Great to be back in Unalakleet. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. So we've spoken to each other in the past. Mm-hmm. But in different capacities.
Yeah.
You were Attorney General for the state of Alaska.
Yes.
In the Parnell administration.
Yeah.
And now you're Senator for Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations on your new job.
Thank you.
I'm
very honored to have the job and really honored to be back out here. The great hospitality that I have experienced in Unalakleet before with families like Mitty and Aurora Johnson and... Gosh, Gail Schubert, everybody, Steve Ivanoff. So it's just great to be back. I love this community, and it's a lot. I get a lot of ideas, as you saw last night, right, when we met with all the community leaders and had dinner. A lot of really good ideas from that.
Mm-hmm. All right, some background on who we're talking with, I think, is important. As I said, you were the state's AG.
Mm-hmm.
You were also the Department of Natural Resources Commissioner.
Yes.
And before that, you worked under the Bush administration. You also have a very distinguished record in military service. I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself. Who are you?
Sure. Well, listen, I am someone who feels very blessed to be in the position I'm in. You know, you mentioned some of my background, but the most important part of my background is, I'm going to get the date wrong. Almost 25 years ago, I got married in Fairbanks to my wife, Julie. Some of your listeners might know her family. That's the Fate family of Fairbanks and Rampart. My mother-in-law, Mary Jane Fate, and Bud Fate are great Alaskans who've been leaders in the community. And so that's how I came to Alaska. I fell in love with a beautiful Athabascan woman, and the rest was history. So we have three teenage daughters, which is a very motivating factor for me because, some of the issues we talked about last night about economic opportunities, some of the challenges that young people face in Alaska growing up are very important to me. So that's really, to me, the most important thing in my life, my wife and my girls, and, serving the people of Alaska. And you did mention... I'm still in the Marines, so I'm still serving in the reserves. And, that's another thing that I've been very focused on as a senator is our great veteran population. We have the highest number of vets per capita of any state in the country. I like to brag about that a lot for Alaska. I'm on the Veterans Affairs Committee, so I have the opportunity to focus on a lot of veterans issues. As you also probably know, another thing I brag about is Alaska Natives serve in the military at higher rates than any other ethnic group in the country. So, I'm going to be heading out to a number of the communities, Nome, Kotzebue, Kivalina, in the next couple days. And what I always think is amazing is you go to communities like Unalakleet as well, and you see all the veterans, right? And it's the older generation, the younger generation. So I'm very proud to be representing that part of our population. So that's my background. I've been somebody who's been, as you mentioned, I was Attorney General for the state. I was a DNR Commissioner. As a Marine, I've deployed a number of times, like a lot of guys in the military. And feel very honored to serve Alaska as a U.S. senator. So one of the things I really like to do, and it's not always easy when the Senate's in session, is to get out to the rural communities. You might recall when I was Attorney General, I chaired what was called the Rural Subcabinet. And so I actually spent a lot of time in as many of the villages and rural communities as I could during my time as Attorney General, because you learn a lot. You saw last night at our dinner, I know politicians have the reputation of talking a lot. What I try to do, particularly when I'm out in the communities, is just listen, just get ideas, understand what the challenges are. So that's what I'm doing here. It's great to be back. And I'm looking forward to this trip. We're going to be really, this is called our work session. I'm not going to be back in Washington again until after Labor Day. So sure. I'm going to be out to all the different communities, just trying to get out, listen, see folks, and understand some of the challenges and issues, and also talk about what we're getting done in Washington. We are getting some things done, as we talked about last night, that are trying to address some of the big challenges, particularly in the rural communities.
Okay. Now, I think because we're in Unalakleet, this is KNSA, it makes sense to me that you're going to Nome and to Kotzebue and even to Kivalina. Why are you here in Unalakleet? Like, can you explain that? What made you say, hey, let's go there, let's visit?
Well, look, you know, I've been out here a few times, and I have, and I'm not just saying this because I'm sitting here in front of you, and but I just have the utmost respect for the leaders of this community. As you know, this is a can-do community. I've met so many Alaska's leaders throughout the whole state who are from here. And, you know, you're one of them. And so in my previous times coming out here, I've learned a lot. I was talking last night about you might remember when I was Attorney General, we did a roundtable out here on education. And I was so impressed, A, how many people showed up, but B, how many parents were so focused on their children's education and so engaged. We've actually done a lot in the last year and a half on education. We passed a big, big law that I think most people in Alaska would really like, called the Every Student Succeeds Act, which is kind of reversing the No Child Left Behind Act that kind of centralized power in Washington on how to educate our children. Well, as you know, there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to educating our children. So this law that we passed actually gets power back to the teachers, to the educators, to the parents, as opposed to having, you know, Washington, D.C. bureaucrats tell us how to educate our kids. But that meeting I was just referencing many years ago when I was out here, I remember thinking about it recently. If we had as many engaged parents, because, you know, the government can do something to help your kids with regard to education, but the key to educating our children is engaged parents. And I just remember coming away from that trip many years ago in Unalakleet with the passion and seeing so many parents who were so passionate about their children's education here, which in many ways is the key to success in life, that I remember thinking, gosh, if every region of the state or the country's parents were as engaged and passionate about their children's education as they were in Unalakleet, we'd be doing a lot better.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Great to be back.
It's nice to hear that.
It's great to be back.
My community from someone outside. So thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now let's talk about your role a little bit. You know, as senator, you're passing bills, you know, making amendments.
Yep.
And talk about your role as an advocate. So for someone sitting in a home in Unalakleet, feeding their kids right now.
Sure.
what, you know, how do you serve them? How, you know, we are your constituents.
Yeah, that's right. I work for everybody who's listening.
So talk about that. How, in what ways do you work for us?
Well, let me start, and I don't want this to sound too kind of processy, but you know, when I got to the Senate, I sat down with Senator Murkowski, who I'm very close with, as you can imagine, and we looked at the committees that she was on, which are really important to the state, and then said, all right, look, these are going to be the committees that I'm going to try and get on. And the reason I tried to get on these committees is they were the key ones for Alaska that she wasn't on. So our idea was to kind of divide and conquer. So what was positive about that is that all the committees I requested when I got to the Senate, I got on. Mm-hmm. So let me give you a few examples. Veterans Affairs, as I mentioned, that's hugely important for our veterans. One of the things I'm really pushing, I introduced a bill that we're working really hard on to get Native allotments to Alaska Native veterans who missed the cutoff to apply for their Native allotment in 1971 because they were serving in the military.
Okay.
That sounds pretty...
That makes sense.
That makes total sense, right? If you're serving in Vietnam or somewhere else in the world because you are a veteran serving your country and you missed the deadline to apply for your Native allotment, should you be penalized? No, absolutely not. But that's one area, just advocacy. So we're trying to make sure that, and by the way, that would extend not just to the veterans, but their families, sure. Right? Because that happened. We estimate maybe up to maybe it's 2,000 missed
that.
Wow. So it's a big deal. I sit on the Armed Services Committee as a veteran myself, as someone who's still serving. As you know, Alaska plays a huge role in our nation's defense. And one of the things I've been trying to do in terms of an advocate is make sure the military, particularly in these challenging times internationally, recognizes the importance of Alaska, maintains a strong troop presence here, and actually brings more troops here, starts to recognize the importance, the critical importance of the Arctic, and get more infrastructure, more assets up here to take care of places in the Arctic, like Unalakleet, like Nome, like COTS. So that's another committee I'm on. I'm on the Environment and Public Works Committee. And that is a committee that oversees, for example, the Corps of Engineers, which is very important to all of our communities. Mm-hmm. I mentioned a bill that we got out of committee. It was a provision, a new program of mine that would focus on underserved communities in terms of water and sewer, which, as you know, in Alaska, unfortunately, we still have dozens of communities that don't have, running water, clean water, flush toilets, right? That most mm-hmm. Americans think that everybody has. We don't. So we have a provision in there, a new program that I'm advocating for is $1.4 billion over 5 years. It hasn't passed the Senate yet, but it got out of committee. It would be a really big deal for the state. And then finally, I'm on the Commerce Committee. And that's a really big one for Alaska mm-hmm. because that has oversight in terms of fisheries, aviation, roads. And again, we're working really hard in terms of advocacy to make sure, for example, the FAA reauthorization bill that we just had reauthorizes the Essential Air Service, which is so critical to so many communities in Alaska. So that was positive. But really, really trying to focus on making sure we have healthy communities, the CDQ program remains strong, healthy coastal communities, and increasing demand for what is a great Alaska-made product, which is our fisheries, both in the country and really globally. You know, I've coined this term on the Commerce Committee. I think my colleagues start to roll their eyes because I use it a lot, but Alaska's the superpower of seafood. 60% of all the seafood harvested in America comes from our shores. To make sure we have healthy, strong coastal communities, food security is really important. So those are the four committees that I'm on, and they each, as you can imagine, relate to Alaska and the people I serve. In different ways, but in important ways.
Sure. And I'm going to bring this up because you mentioned it and because it was brought up last night, but I do have to disclose that that I do work for our CDQ, Norton yeah. Sound Economic Development Corporation, but I'll bring it up because it was mentioned last night sure. and because you mentioned CDQs. Now, there's been tribes throughout Alaska that have been calling for a seat on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, Fishery right. Management Council, the governing body for the Bering Sea fisheries. And can you talk about your view on that?
Sure.
It's, you know, as I understand it, Alaska, the state of Alaska, and has the majority.
Correct.
On that council.
Correct.
So there's 6 Alaska council members
correct.
And 5 from Washington.
And Oregon.
And Oregon.
Yes.
And talk about, you know, your response to the individuals and organizations
sure.
who say tribes in Alaska need a seat on the council.
Well, look, it's so that's in the Magnuson-Stevens Act, and that act has actually been quite successful in terms of creating healthy coastal communities in Alaska. Not perfect by any means, but you know, a lot of people don't recognize that our fishery, the North Pacific Council area, is considered the best managed fishery probably in the world, the most sustainable, the most. And that's because of the Magnuson-Stevens Act set up this council process, as you're talking about, where you have council members from different different parts of the country who are the experts who actually manage the quotas, manage the takes, for the different species. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to make sure there's sound science that goes into the expertise that's on the council that is supposed to reflect different stakeholders in the community in Alaska. So that's the setup. And as you mentioned, in statute, there's a council of 11 members. Mm-hmm. Six are from Alaska. Okay, so that's really important. The most critical thing from my perspective is making sure Alaska has the majority. So there have been calls to say, well, look, can we get a specified seat for a tribal interest or tribal members, or, for example, subsistence interests and subsistence. My view is that it's very important to represent all of Alaska. There's no doubt about it. And right now, because the governor of Alaska gets to choose who the council members are, he can do that right now. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's available right now to do that. The question then becomes, well, all right, well, if the governor does it, great, that would be good. If he doesn't, why can't we just put this in statute? The one thing is I've kind of looked at this is we are looking at a reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which would mean rewriting some of that law to update it. We haven't gotten there yet because we've been holding hearings on it, but you want to make sure that if we push to do that, it's actually it actually helps Alaska. Mm-hmm. And the one slight concern I have is if you somehow tried to reopen how the council was represented, that some people might want to try to attack the Alaska majority, mm-hmm. the 6-5 majority. That nobody in Alaska wants that. Everybody has agreed that no. That we have to keep no matter what. So from my perspective, it's a balance. And as we look at, and look, I one of the things I love doing, and as you can imagine, given how important the fishing community is for the state, by the way, employs more Alaskans than the oil and gas industry. A lot of people don't know that. That I'm listening to all these different ideas with regard to how the council is set up, how we manage our fisheries, how to maintain strong, healthy coastal communities. But on the specific issue right now, there's nothing that would prevent the governor from designating somebody already today, mm-hmm. From a tribal organization or somebody who's very focused on subsistence use. Mm-hmm.
I will say this. So you called Alaska fisheries, what did you call it? The superpower of, mm-hmm. So despite the fact, or, you know, despite that, we still cannot argue. I mean, if the Magnuson-Stevens Act is open, you know, if there's some changes made to it.
Yeah.
You just said that we're, you know, Alaska's fisheries is a superpower.
We are.
So even though we are the superpower, there's still the potential of losing the majority on the council?
Well, remember, there's two Alaska senators.
Sure. Okay.
And there's a lot more other senators from other states.
Okay.
Right? So, yeah. I mean, we certainly play a very important role, and that's, but there's two of us. I mean, heck, there's four from Washington and Oregon.
Okay.
Who probably don't like the current 6-5 breakdown.
Sure.
Right? So, no, it's a great question, but the realities are sometimes you can, if you feel you might be outnumbered, you gotta make sure you keep what's strong already. And
okay.
Right now it's strong. But look, one of the things, as I mentioned, that I do, as you can imagine, all the time, is meet with the different groups with regard to our fishing industry, the mm-hmm. CDQ groups, the different species, the different gear groups. I was just down in Kodiak a couple months ago for Comfish for 2 days, and that was really everybody down there. So I'm always taking in, listening. That's a bit, again, part of the reason I'm out in the region right now is, hey, what are the different ideas? What are the challenges and how can we address them? So I'm always open for ideas. And as we look at the reauthorization of Magnuson-Stevens, these are all the things that we're looking at.
Sure. All right. Thanks. Now, last night, it was also brought up the water situation is incomplete, the aging infrastructure. Right. And I wish Shannon was here, our city manager, to explain exactly the issue that we currently have. We're, you know, on a water notice. We're told to, not take long showers to, you know. So we have had an issue for a number of years here in Utiloquite. I think right now I'd like to understand, so what's your role in a situation like this?
Well, look, one of the things that I did, and this is kind of, so I'm on the, like I said, I'm on the Environment and Public Works Committee, and it's actually not a very well-known committee, and, you know, a lot of times, you know, Armed Services or Veterans or Commerce or, you know, Senator Murkowski's the chair of Energy and Natural Resources, which is really important for Alaska. Environment and Public Works is actually a pretty darn important committee for our state because it has oversight of the Corps of Engineers. So a lot of the projects, even in Unicleet, that people are looking at now involve cooperation with funding from the Corps of Engineers. So part of my role, and as I mentioned at dinner with the community leaders last night, is if there's specific projects, and I really want to emphasize this with everybody who's listening, if there are specific projects where your community is working with the federal agency and you don't think, A, the federal agency is listening or is taking too much time or maybe isn't abiding by its own regulations, you should definitely reach out to my office. Reach out to me personally, because a huge part of my job is to advocate for the state on very specific projects. And we do that a lot. And weighing in, bringing these projects to the attention of the leadership of the Corps and other federal agencies is important, and it can help. So that's one area, and I certainly plan on doing that. And that's another reason, coming out to the communities. Then you learn. You see we were out after the dinner last night. We were out kind of looking at different infrastructure. We actually went out to see, you know, where the water source is and the aging pumps and But the second area, as I mentioned earlier, there's been a lot of discussion nationally because of this really tragic situation in Flint, Michigan. If you recall, it wasn't really a federal government fault. The local leaders in Flint, Michigan decided to change their water source from, I think it was like Michigan, to the Flint River. And the Flint River was not very clean. So they had problems with corroded pipes and got lead in the water, and, you know, young children were drinking, you know, water that was contaminated. That's horrible. There's no doubt about it. So there was a lot of attention on Flint, Michigan, and what people were referring to as aging infrastructure. Well, whenever we had a hearing on that, I was like, look, this is a serious issue, and I understand aging infrastructure and how we need to help try to address this. How about communities with no infrastructure? Right? Let's face it. How about communities with no infrastructure? Let's focus on them even before we focus on the aging infrastructure communities. And of course, you know, Lorelei, that we have a lot of communities with no infrastructure on these issues. So I use that opportunity as a way to try to educate my colleagues and say, hey, guess what? In America, there's thousands of people who don't have, you know, running water or clean water and sewer, Americans. That's not right. So what I was able to do, and again, I'm hopeful to get this through the whole Senate. I reached out to one of the Democratic senior Democrat on the committee, Barbara Boxer, and said, look, I really have a problem in my state. Can you help me with this? Because, you know, to move big pieces of legislation, it's good to have bipartisan support. So her staff and my staff worked on what would be a new program to serve underserved communities who have a lack of infrastructure. And it passed out of committee unanimously, this new program. It's a $1.4 billion program over 5 years. It's not just Alaska, but it would be Alaska, other states, some states like Mississippi, West Virginia have communities like that. So to me, my role is both kind of the advocate on specific projects, right? Sure. Very specific, helping communities get the attention of the federal government, the Corps of Engineers, to move forward on projects in Alaska. And then to think more broadly and strategically, which will take a longer, you know, longer time, but on bigger programs to mm-hmm. try to address this. And then doing that, of course, you need to educate your fellow members. I mean, I think a lot of people were surprised when every chance I could, I was saying, all right, I know we're all focused on aging infrastructure, but I'd like to inform members of the U.S. Senate, there's communities with no infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them happen to be my constituents. Mm-hmm. And this shouldn't be like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I need to say this. It's currently 9:30 on Saturday morning. I'm sitting here with Senator Dan Sullivan. I'm Lorelei Ivanoff joining you on this rainy Saturday morning. We brought the great weather for you.
Well, at least the wind died down a little.
Yeah. One thing you can count on is wind in Unalakleet. You mentioned educating your colleagues. And I think there are many of your colleagues, even many Americans, who don't understand that the United States is an Arctic nation.
Yes.
And you mentioned the Arctic. Now, I was at the Arctic Frontiers Conference in Norway earlier this year, and every single country who's, you know, every single representative from every country spoke about the need to work with indigenous peoples, you know, in regards to development mm-hmm. and, you know, ship traffic and the effects on marine mammal movement, those types of things. The only country who didn't mention working with indigenous people was the United States. So the representative from our country. Tell me your thoughts when development takes place in the Arctic, when there's more ship traffic, which there already is.
Yeah.
People in, you know, Little Diomede, Gamble, Savunga, Nome, people are seeing more ship traffic. How do you see the U.S. government working with tribes, with indigenous, you know, with the indigenous people in our country?
Well, look, it's a great question. And, you know, the irony, of course, is that America is an Arctic nation for one reason, and that's because of Alaska, right? And so one of the things that's been a frustration from my perspective is that when the federal government, and you're giving an example of what you just witnessed, when our federal government is talking about Arctic issues, the number one constituency they need to be consulting with and doing outreach with is Alaskans. Alaska Natives, certainly, because when you look at the Arctic, the Alaskans who are disproportionately impacted are the Alaska Native communities, period. That's just a fact. So encouraging that kind of outreach and input is really, really important. So one of the things that I've been trying to do is educate federal officials, my fellow senators, but also people in the executive branch on these issues. And the issues, as you know, and you just mentioned, is a broad cross-section. Let me give you one example that kind of, I think, you know, surprised some people, but I'm already starting to work on it, is what you mentioned, marine mammals. Well, I was at the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission meeting this winter up in Barrow. Spoke at that, and there's not a lot of Americans who know that we still conduct subsistence whaling mm-hmm. in America. Mm-hmm. So we have a quota coming up, another quota that's always a battle. It'll be coming up in 2018. So I sat down with all the leadership at the commission meeting in Barrow and said, "Hey, here's the strategy. We need to make sure we have the right quota for our subsistence whaling, but I'm going to start kind of, you know, what we would say in the Marine Corps, prepping the battlefield." What does that mean? It means starting to educate people. So, I don't know, about a month ago, I went down the Senate floor and gave a big speech on whaling, and with big photos and pictures and just describing what we do in the Arctic. And, hey, these are your fellow Americans. This is what makes our country great. Look at my constituents. This is a very culturally very important, but also an amazing aspect of what part of what makes up America, right? The great quilt of our country. So that's one area, that's an example where we're trying to say, so when the quota comes up, at least senators are very knowledgeable, right? So they know. So they're not like, wait, what's the quota? What? Because I started to talk about the quota. Hey, look at what we do. And when this quota comes up, I'm going to need your support, meaning all my other senators. But the other area, and that's one extreme, and then the other is, you know, as I mentioned, I sit on the Armed Services Committee. And we have been raising the issue of the need for more attention on the strategic aspects of the Arctic. And you're talking about one, which is shipping and opening the sea lanes. Well, there's opportunity there, but of course, there's challenges. And as you know, in the Arctic, the communities that are most impacted are the ones that are, you know, Barrow, all the communities, all the villages, certainly Unalakleet, Nome. So what I've been trying to advocate for, and we're starting to make progress on it, is both having the infrastructure to make sure we have the ability to respond to spills, but also the assets, whether they're military assets. And so we're making progress on that. I was able to, in the bill last year, Coast Guard bill last year, to get federal land transferred to at Port Clarence, transferred to Bering Straits with regard to the port there that they're looking at. This year in the defense authorization bill, was able to get a whole provision in there about a brand new concept for the Secretary of Defense. It has to designate a strategic Arctic port, which of course, from my perspective, once they designate that, then we're going to try and make sure there's funding behind that. And in the defense appropriations bill moving through the Senate right now, there's a provision, $1 billion provision for at least one icebreaker. So we've been talking about icebreakers forever, as you know. But this is real money, actually. $1 billion could probably build two. So the thing that I find where there's encouraging opportunity, I was chairing the conference between the senators and the House members, the conference committee on the defense authorization bill right before I came home. I was chairing the subcommittee on what was called Sea Power. And that's ports, that's the Navy. And when I mentioned my Arctic strategic Arctic port provision, what was really encouraging was that these are senators and House members, Democrats and Republicans. So many of them were, hey, we think this is a great idea. And these were congressmen and senators who weren't even close to the Arctic. So I think it's starting to break through. And but it's a longer term issue. And even the Secretary of Defense, who I've asked in hearings several times, has admitted in public testimony when I've asked them questions, hey, we're behind in terms of where other countries are, particularly Russia, that, you know, which has 41 icebreakers and is looking to build 10 more. You know, we have two and one is broken. And so we're behind, but I think the good news is the tide is starting to turn and people in the Congress are focused in a positive way on recognizing we need to do more. And your point at the outset is exactly right. Whatever we do, we always have to take into consideration the ideas and the concerns of Alaskans, and in particular, the Alaska Native communities that are so impacted by these developments. Look, some of them can be negative. Some of them can also be positive. More infrastructure in this part of the state would be great for, I think, everybody. So that's what we're working on.
Yeah. Knowing that the nearest port, the nearest Coast Guard station is 800 miles away, maybe more, Dutch Harbor, to think that if there was, if something did happen here, if there was a spill, if there, you know, one of these cruise ships that's, you know, going near Wales now, you know, something happens.
And here's the issue, and you're raising it. What I'm trying to do is make the federal government and agencies and spending act before something happens. As you know, a lot of times the federal government will only act after some catastrophic event. Then they're like, okay, gosh, now we got to really act. No, let's envision what could happen. Let's envision both the challenges and the opportunities and act now.
Yeah.
So we can be ready for either. And we're getting there. It's not fast enough. But like I said, $1 billion appropriations for an icebreaker, as you, I know you've been following that for a long time. That's actually progress, a strategic Arctic port in law that has to be designated by the Secretary of Defense and the Homeland Security Secretary. So it's both Coast Guard and Navy. That's a provision that I'm hoping will make sure it passes the final bill of the Defense Authorization Act. So we're getting there, but we got a long way to go.
Well, it sounds like there's at least good conversation that has taken place in D.C. and people are more aware that, yes, indeed, the U.S. is an Arctic nation. And yes, indeed, things are happening in the Arctic and we need to prepare. So
that's happening, and it's happening in a way that's both. I think it used to be just the Alaska delegation, right? And everybody's like, rolling their eyes. Sure. What does that mean? And now I'm seeing it certainly. Okay. Senators on the Armed Services Committee, senators on the Commerce Committee, Democrats, Republicans. And really importantly, like I just said, when I was chairing this Sea Power Conference for the defense bill, members of the House were really interested in icebreakers, the Arctic, and a strategic Arctic port. That's good news for us. We just got to keep pressing it.
All right. About 20 minutes left in this
oh,
hour.
Oh, gosh. It's going fast.
On this Saturday, July 30th, 2016. I'm Lorelei Ivanoff, sitting here with U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan. I do have to bring this up. We are in, you know, a very Democratic, very blue section of the state of Alaska in the country. You are Republican. You did address at the Republican, you did speak at the Republican National Convention. Talk about that. Donald Trump.
Well, listen, I spoke at the convention. I was asked, I came in 2014 as part of a really a wave of new U.S. senators. And what I was trying to do, and I was up there briefly, if you saw it, I was really trying to brag about this class that I am part of, the freshman class of the United States Senate, which is 12 new Republican senators. That was the biggest wave in over 50 years, I think. And I just thought it was very important to highlight this kind of group because it, I like to brag about my class of senators. It's very diverse. It's veterans, which is great to have more veterans, Marines, soldiers. It's everything from, you know, fishermen to CEOs to governors to doctors to, you know, one of my colleagues is a former hog farmer from Iowa. So I was up there saying, look, this is a really, this is a great class, a lot of energy. And one of the things that I emphasize in my remarks is how important it is to focus on economic opportunity, the American dream for everybody. I think what's really interesting, whether it's how, you know, Donald Trump got so many supporters. Remember, he had, there were 16 Republicans in addition to him, very strong group of Republicans that he beat all of them, right? It's pretty remarkable. But on the Democratic side, I think a lot of people were surprised how well Bernie Sanders did, right? I mean, he won Alaska in his primary in a very significant way versus Hillary Clinton. So to me, what is driving that? I think that's that kind of surprised people who focus on politics pretty dramatically. I have a theory of what's driving, whether it's the supporters for Senator Sanders, who I know well, or Donald Trump, who I don't know as well. And that is the state of the economy. You know, Lorelei, when you look at where we are as a country, and I know I know sometimes it can sound boring with talking about job numbers and economic growth, but we, our economic growth in the last 10 years as a country has been abysmal by any term, by any definition, and same with the job growth. And I think so many Americans, Alaskans included, we're certainly facing economic headwinds, are really, really concerned about the fact that we can't grow the American economy. And when you don't have a strong economy, it impacts so many other things. It impacts security, it impacts even social cohesion. And just yesterday, you know, the numbers came out on the latest quarter of economic growth. They were horrible. 1%. Essentially, the economy is flatlining. So to me, what I was trying to emphasize at the in my remarks at the Republican convention was this class, that's a new class, a lot of energy, a lot of youth, a lot of experience, and how important it is to get back to the issues of strong job growth and strong economic growth, which we have not had. And with the exception of national security, I think the federal government's most important role is making sure Americans, Alaskans have an economic future, have hope. And so that's what I emphasize in my remarks. That's what I've been emphasizing really as a senator since I've got in. And I don't think enough attention is given to the fact that, you know, our economy as a country has really, really underperformed. And these are the Obama administration's numbers that I use, right? So there's no doubt on the numbers. It's how do we fix this? How do we get back to what I refer to as traditional levels of economic growth? American levels, 3%, 4%, under Democrats and Republicans. That's kind of been the strength of the country since our founding, and we're losing that. And I think people are really, really concerned whether they're voting for, you know, Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump, and we gotta have a way to fix it.
And I think I do have to say, so I hear what you're saying. You're concerned about the economy.
I'm very, very concerned about. To me, it's the number one, and I'm concerned about the Alaska economy, right?
Okay.
And in the rural communities, everywhere.
I think to support someone who is known to be racist, who is known to be sexist, who is known to say bizarre things, this person representing our country in this, you know, in our country's
office. Well, look, anytime he has, you know, obviously I'm not someone who supports anything like that, right? And anytime Donald Trump has talked about things that I disagree with, I'm the first guy to come out and say, no, I disagree with this. I disagree with this. I think that's a bad policy.
And you have done that. Mm-hmm.
Very consistently. So what I'm concerned about is, you know, and look, it's, you know, I think these are choices that are not always, what I've been focused on is the Senate, as I mentioned. But, you know, when you look at the economy, you also got to look at kind of what the other candidates talked about. I mean, Hillary Clinton has come out and said she's against Arctic development. Hillary Clinton has come out and said she's going to regulate the resource development industry so much that there won't be any fracking, you know, ability. That we do that a lot here. That's our economy. Hillary Clinton, you know, an issue that I know people in Alaska are very focused on, Second Amendment rights. She said she wants to put more restrictions, executive action on limiting your right to exercise your Second Amendment rights. She thinks the VA is doing a great job. I mean, there are issues here. And what I've been trying to do, and since I've been a senator, I've been very focused on it. How do we create more economic opportunity, more jobs, good paying jobs for Alaskans and Americans? And right now, it's really not happening. I mean, by any measure. So what I've been focusing on most is what would be strongest for our economy, particularly here at home in Alaska. And, you know, her views, I mean, she's somebody who said, you know, she's going to have policies that put a lot of coal miners out of work. My policies will put coal miners out of work and coal companies out of work. Well, we have mining companies here in Alaska. And my view is we should promote responsible resource development. So, you know, I think this election certainly has been a bizarre one by any measure, both with regard to candidates on the Democratic side and Republican side. But what I'm going to do is continue to focus on policies that bring economic opportunity, good paying jobs to Alaskans. And I've been, hopefully you've seen it, I've been going down trying to lead in the Senate on these issues, right? How do we grow our economy? How do we create good jobs? How do we create good jobs in the rural communities and keep these communities strong? And that's going to be the continued focus of my time in the Senate.
All right, about 10 minutes left, and you have to go to an open house at the community center, which all Unalakleet residents are invited to, of course.
Yes, we hope that everybody can attend.
Yeah. In closing, let's talk about, you know, the 1.5 years that you've been in the Senate. What are you most proud of if you think back on your last year and a half in your time in D.C.? What's the one thing you would mention that you're really, really proud of?
Well, you might remember when I was Attorney General, I focused a lot on the issue of sexual assault and domestic violence because it's a problem in the state, as you know. And maybe as a father of three teenage daughters and a husband to an amazing, smart, beautiful wife, this is very personal to me. And as you know, it's a challenge both in Alaska, but it's a challenge throughout the country. And you know, when you talk about issues, people talk about social issues and sometimes how they divide the country. One of the things that I tried to do when I got in the Senate is say, well, why don't we focus on this social issue? This shouldn't divide the country. And by the way, it seems like, and you probably have seen this, it seems like when people talk about it, politicians, some people say, well, that's kind of a women's issue, right? That women bring up. And my view has been, no, actually, it should be a man's issue as much as a woman's issue because, let's face it, the people who are doing this mostly are men. So I've tried to take that focus, and it doesn't get a lot of attention, but I've already had a couple bills. One in particular, it's passed the Senate, passed the House, signed into law by the president in my first year. I was proud of that. And I'm trying to bring a lot of attention to that issue because it's a national issue and it's an issue that I think people can agree on. And to be honest, I didn't think there was a lot of people focusing on it in the U.S. Senate. So that was a commitment I made. I'm passionate about that issue. And, you know, when I meet with particularly the young people in Alaska, I always talk about it. I always look at the high school students and say, hey, guys, mostly, we have the opportunity to fix this, right? This mm-hmm. is we can fix this. It's going to be up to you. So I'm going to continue to focus on that, but I think we've made some good progress, at least in terms of one piece of legislation that already got passed, and I have a number of other bills. One is called the Power Act, which is pro bono legal services for women who are victims of domestic violence. So this is the real irony. If you're somebody and you commit a crime of domestic violence or sexual assault, and you're the perpetrator, you have a Sixth Amendment right to counsel under the Constitution. Mm-hmm. You get a lawyer. Mm-hmm. You're the bad guy. If you're the victim, you don't get anything. So one of the things that I've been trying to do is, well, wait a minute, why? How come the victims can't get attorneys? So I have a bill that passed the Senate that would require all the U.S. attorneys across the country. You might remember I put on these what I called pro bono legal summits mm-hmm. when I was Attorney General to get lawyers to come and provide legal services to women who are victims of domestic violence. So now I'm trying to do that for the whole country to create what I call an army of lawyers to help provide legal service and protection to women or men, but it's mostly women who are victims of domestic violence or sexual assault to help them break out of the cycle. Mm-hmm. That already passed the Senate. I'm trying to move it through the House. I'm having a little bit of a hard time with the chairman of the Judiciary Committee over there. So those are the issues that I think bring us together mm-hmm. and need leadership on, and I'm trying to provide that.
All right. Well, thank you, Senator, for coming in today and chatting with me.
Do we have time for one other?
Sure.
I just want to. So the other issue, and we talked about last night, it's a little bit of a tough issue to talk about. But next week, I'm hosting a summit in the Mat-Su Valley on this big problem with what what's called the opioids or heroin addiction problem. In some of our communities, like fortunately, I think here in Unalakleet, because we were talking about last night, haven't really seen that. There are other communities in the state who are being ravaged by this. Mm-hmm. Young high school kids, believe it or not, it sounds horrible to even say it, who are hooked on heroin and are experiencing overdoses. And it's happening throughout the country. It's happening throughout the state. And what we're going to do next week, I've invited some of the top officials, federal officials, including the Surgeon General of the United States, the number two official at the Health and Human Services, the top Veterans Affairs official, and all the top leaders in Alaska who are focused on this issue to try and help people understand it, help people who are struggling with it to have pathways to get out of addiction. But believe it or not, it's actually a big problem in the state. And the Senate and the House and the President just signed a bill that's going to start to help on that, which I co-sponsored, called the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act. But if your listeners are interested, we're going to get information out to live stream the summit all day that's going to come out of the Mattsu Valley. And we're hoping it's going to bring people hope, parents or kids or teenagers. Because, you know, the scary thing about this problem, Lorelai, you can be a teenage kid, star athlete, straight A student. You can try the heroin or the opioids once and get hooked. And then, you know, it could really do damage, and we're trying to prevent that from happening.
Mm-hmm. And it definitely does damage. I mean, we've seen it in the region. We've seen it in Nome. When I was news director at KNOM, we covered that extensively and held call-in shows. And there are parents who are definitely concerned about the heroin issue in some of our communities.
Yeah.
And it's something that every community should be aware of. So
yeah, even if it's not happening in your community, mm-hmm. to be aware of it so you can identify. What's really frightening is that you see and you hear about these stories of the young high school girl or boy who's, like I said, straight A student, good athlete, mm-hmm. and the parents don't even know, and they find out that, you know, they're out, they go up in the bedroom and they see their, you know, daughter with a needle in her arm and she's overdosed, right? Mm-hmm. It's horrible and it's scary, and we need to come together. And we're trying to bring resources and ideas to Alaska with the top federal officials who are working on this to come and listen to Alaskans and give ideas both on how we get through this addiction problem that's really not only ravaging communities in our state, but across the country. Mm-hmm. More people last year were killed by overdoses in America for the first time than even car accidents. I mean, it is an epidemic, and we got to try to address it.
Mm-hmm. And it's here.
It's here.
In Alaska. All right, a few more minutes. You have to be at the open house, the community visit at the community center. Again, Senator Dan Sullivan here in Unalakleet, U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan here in Unalakleet today. I'm Lorelai Ivanov. Thank you so much. I have to say thank you for supporting the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Yes.
Thanks so much for doing that. Very important. Communities all throughout Alaska need to know what's happening in the country, in the state, and in their own communities.
And the final thing I'll mention, you know, Mike Flegel, who's my deputy chief of staff, he's here with me. The other thing we want to make sure people are aware of is you have, you know, I talk about, you know, port projects and things about that, but for any individual listener, for example, if you're a veteran and you're not getting the what you think you have earned through the VA, please contact my office, you know, in Anchorage. And we have caseworkers who do constituent service to try and help individual Alaskans with some of their challenges with regard to federal government. I got a great team who works hard on those issues. And that's certainly a big part of my job is serving as your senator.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming in
okay.
today.
Thank you, Lorelai. Great to see you.
Good to see you. So it's currently 10 o'clock on this Saturday, July 30th, 2016. I'm Lorelai Ivanov. Enjoy your Saturday. We will now join KDLG's regular programming.